Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now, or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile, and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, Scott, and thanks to you for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now, if you have any questions about the cold weather that's coming soon, or the temperatures right now, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Not necessarily about the temperatures, but what those temperatures do to the plant material. Like those maple trees. The maples have been nothing short of spectacular so far this fall, end of summer. But man, oh man, temperatures in the 20s, you could see some leaves coming down like unbelievable. Oh, and this is Saturday morning. We get together and have a discussion about what's impacting your landscape. Or maybe you want to build a new garden space for vegetables or herbs or cut flowers or whatever it happens to be. And how about those houseplants? Well, my houseplants are coming in today. Yes, they will. And under grow lights in the basement, that's where they head. And what is a potting mix, by the way? And how do you improve your soil to have better production out of the plant material you choose? And should you be pruning this late? And is there still bugs out there or diseases you need to be concerned with? Well, use the information I'll share with you, and hopefully it'll solidify your options with the final judgment of the action you're going to take on your shoulders. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Drew. He's producing today, so he answers the phone. All he needs is your first name, not why you're calling or anything else. And then he'll get you onto the computer screen, and then I will talk to you. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you'd like, and I call it a walk and talk. You can go to my website, get my phone number. I'm still having some real problems with my computers and the internet and everything else. I can't believe it. It's been a long time. My wife, Tracy, she's on my you-know-what. Like, get this thing taken care of. I'm sick and tired of this. And I go, oh, okay, well. And, well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, I parked at Julia and 9th. You think, Julia and 9th, where's that? Well, it is in the city of St. Louis. And I got out of my car and I started looking at various things, and there was baskets and there was hoodies and there was hats. Oh my. There was bushel basket size mums, and they all were so many different great fall colors. There's gourds and mini pumpkins and big pumpkins, like really big ones and white ones. And some of the big ones, the orange ones, some of them had warts and other ones didn't. There was bales of straw, and there was all kinds of spices from around the world. And, of course, locally grown vegetables and fruits. There was huge aloe leaves and asparagus spears shooting upward. Locally grown, not grown, locally produced honey and jelly and jams. There was some sugar canes there, too. And remember, no smoking here. Where was this? Well, this is Soulard Market. And for this time of year, this is a great place to go wandering around. It's just unbelievable. All the different things that are available. Locally grown vegetables, it's just kind of incredible. Besides the tropical stuff, here right next to a locally grown vegetable stand is pineapples. Wow. And all kinds of different stuff. So Soulard Market is just a neat place to go and be, and especially this time of year. It just has that great feel. And there's lots of different farmers markets, or, you know, seasonal type markets with vendors. But this one is just has a kind of a different, you know, different feel and different flavor to it altogether. So if you want to head down that way, it's certainly worth your time and effort. Just plan on watch out for parking and everything else. Most of the parking, there is some free parking. I forget exactly where it said it was, but there is, you know, places. So where you might have to walk a block or two in a residential neighborhood. And Soulard is just a nice combination. I spent 11 years living in Soulard and really super enjoyed it. Some of the old historic buildings, old historic churches. And now it's, you know, it's got a blend of new things. It's just new homes and new buildings, and it's just a wild combination of various things. So that's, you know, I don't know if that's exactly where, you know, the city of St. Louis started. Well, I know it's not, but it started in Carondelet. But anyway, it's just a great fun place to go wandering around. If you plan on it, just go ahead and plan on spending some time, because just to walk around and see all the different things. I mean, all kinds of T-shirts and, you know, Cardinals and Blues and St. Louis and everything else. As well as I said, just so much produce. I mean, fresh produce from, you know, all over the region. And like the honey I was talking about, it's Miller's honey, which is from, I forget what city that is in Illinois. It's very close by. But they also have, one of the things I like by Miller's is their apple butter. It's has some nice spicy taste to it. And I get it all the time. I have it. I have toast almost every morning, and I probably put apple butter on it maybe once every 3 or 4 days. I kind of mix it in with all other different kinds of things. So, and one, I'm going to remind you of this. Remember, there is no smoking in Soulard Market, so please don't do that. And even though it's fresh air and everything else, they just don't want the smoking in there. And there's a playground next to, you know, right next to it. So there's all kinds of stuff very, very close by. So if you have any interest in it, head down to Julia and Ninth. See if you can find that. It was there was some big trucks there. There's a Domino's right across the street from a Soulard Market. And, you know, at the Domino's, there was a giant tractor trailer there. I don't know what they were. I couldn't tell that the door was open, so I don't know how they were getting in there to do stuff. But just a lot of different kinds of activities. The activity was starting to pick up by the vendors and other people that were starting to show up. I don't think anybody was buying anything yet because they were just setting up. But some people get down there really quick and get stuff set up pretty fast. I mean, it was really kind of amazing how they stack everything so coolly that it doesn't, I mean, you can pick up something and doesn't send all the tomatoes down onto the floor or anything like that. So anyway, again, the Good Gardening Stroll today was at the Soulard Market, because great place for pumpkins and gourds and who knows what, oh my. So if you have any kind of interest at all, there's going to be something there for you just to catch your eye. Not necessarily, yes, you should probably maybe think about getting a few things, but just to look at it, it was just absolutely amazing. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I'll be back after these messages. Yes, folks, remember that with the cooler weather, too, to make sure that your perennials and your lawn and everything else is getting a little bit of moisture. So irrigate, turn on your, make sure your irrigation system's not turned off, or get your hoses out and get everything well watered. So let's head over to Tony's yard. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Very good.
Good. Hey, I've got a maple tree sapling. It's been in a pot for a couple of years now. Right now it's in like a 15-gallon pot. It's roughly about 4 feet tall and maybe a little over a half-inch caliper at the base. I'm looking at winter coming on. Can I put this in the ground this fall here, or should I keep it in the pot and bury the pot, or bring it inside, or what do you think?
Oh, definitely don't bring it inside. That's what,
right.
I mean, that would be bad, bad news. No, you can still plant. I mean, even though the temperatures are dropping, the soil temperature is still pretty warm. And so consequently,
right.
That's what triggers new root system growth. So just water, right. You know, before you pull it out of the pot. And then make sure that when you you dig the hole, that the top 10 to 20% of the root ball is above the surrounding ground. And then, you know, get it planted. And you want it three times the diameter, so you're going to have to be digging a pretty good-sized hole. And then put about 1 to 2 inches of mulch around it, and you should be fine.
Yeah. I mean, this was like a little volunteer maple tree that came up underneath my October glory. So, you know, there's hardly anything, it's not, too small to plant is what I just didn't know if it would survive the winter or not, being that small of a little tree.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, I mean, the Arbor Society and, groups like that send out little seedlings that are, you know, maybe a quarter inch, you know, or a half inch at the biggest.
Yeah, I've done that before. Yeah.
Yeah. So
okay.
You're fine.
No problem. All right. Well, thanks. I'm going to do that then. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And again, phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. One of the things besides the pumpkins and gourds and everything else is the mums. I mean, they are really spectacular. More and more people are growing them, but a lot of people are just buying them already grown, like the ones that were at Soulard Market that were huge. I mean, I've never really seen them that big, so I don't know what greenhouse is actually growing them, or multiple greenhouses are doing it, but the mums are just, they're really striking. There's no getting around it, and they're really kind of fun to grow in your own garden. I mean, it takes a lot of work to get them so they're going to be bushy and everything else. It takes a lot of pinching. They take a lot of, you know, they want to be fertilized all the way through the growing season to make them look spectacular here in the fall. And again, here's some of the chrysanthemum trivia. It's the second most popular flower in the world, and I've said this a couple weeks in a row, but I think it's well worth it. And only the rose is more popular across the world than the mums are. And in Chinese culture, the chrysanthemum is a noble plant, and it's along with plum blossoms, orchids, and bamboo. The Japanese emperors loved the mums and they actually had them on their throne. So they kind of just loved to kind of sit on them. And they were first introduced to the Western world in the 17th century. So that they've been around in this part of the world for quite a while, because they started, you know, in the more or less the Orient. They, John Stevens imported a cultivar called Dark Purple from England. And today there are more than 200,000 cultivars of mums worldwide, not 200,000, 20,000. But still, that is quite a few. So just realize that that's, you know, the case with the mums. Other than thinking about the mums in general, I mean, more and more people are starting to buy some decorative type of gourds and pumpkins and things like that, and setting them on their front steps. And it's really kind of neat when I take my walks around just to see what kind of decorations. And then, of course, this time of year, what is there as far as decorations and front yards and things like that? some of the inflatable things are just massive. And I just can't believe that you know, people are doing that. I don't have any inflatable stuff at all. I've got the old-fashioned type of Halloween or fall decoration. But, I mean, some of these spiders, I don't know how, I don't know how and how much, you know, electricity it takes, because people will leave them inflated not only during the night but during the day. Now, please remember, if you do have some inflatable stuff, if you set them on your lawn or you set them, you know, in your garden space or things like that, that, you know, after several days, the humidity as a result of that could cause some fungus problems in your lawn or for some of your plant materials. So just realize that, you know, they're great, they're wonderful, and, you know, but they can have an adverse effect just in general. So that's not to say they will have it, but there is an option of having that. So just be real conscious if you have them out there. And a lot of times, I mean, some people leave them inflated 24 hours a day, but other people will let them deflate, you know, in the daytime. And consequently, then they're just a big plastic mat laying on top of the ground. And that is really, you know, a situation for fungus and humidity and things along that line. So just keep that in mind. And other things that you need to be thinking about is just the weed situation is still going on. There's no getting around it. And the cool season weeds, which are the henbit, the dead nettle, the chickweed, the annual bluegrass, and a few of the other things too, rabbit's foot clover, and shepherd's purse, they're the ones that are just prolific right now. They germinated from weeds, from seeds, into these weeds in mid to late August. And now they're just, they're really kind of surging ahead because this is the perfect weather for them. The cooler it gets, they could care less. What really bothers them is when it starts getting warm in the springtime, then they start disappearing. But this is when they're going to be prolific. And the whole time they're flowering and producing seeds, and those seeds will drop into your lawn. And that's one of the things that we talk about so often is what pre-emergence take care of. And weed infestations can indicate the soil, the growing site, and cultural practices that you're doing. And you may need to make some changes for some of those. For example, like the ground ivies is almost, you know, can be found in shady areas where shade-tolerant turf grasses begin to thin out. So a lot of times if you have a thinner lawn, that's going to be a situation where your lawn is kind of not inviting, but making it so the weeds can have a good chance. The annual bluegrass thrives under adverse growing conditions, whether it be shady, whether it be wet, you compacted soil, so they're really kind of tough. And there's broadly, you know, perennial type weeds too. So there's the plantain and knotweed and things along that line that grow on compacted soil. So where you're not able to grow your, like I said, your turf grass, your lawn very well, then this is a great circumstance. I will say also perennial weeds that are growing, the nutsedge is really taking off. So as dry as it was, I didn't think it would be quite that prolific this time of year, but it certainly is. So just watch out. And especially in areas that are low or sunken, you know, low meaning sunken, and that where moisture can collect, whether it's irrigated moisture or if it does rain. And the chickweed and crabgrass found a lot of times if you cut your lawn too short, that just is an invitation for the weed situation to be even worse. So weeds are just optimistic, and they take advantage of any situation. And, I mean, millions of weed seeds can actually exist in your lawn areas, you know, just on the surface of your soil. So they don't, you know, most of them, the seeds do not germinate. Or not, you know, some of them can be eaten by soil insects and microorganisms, kind of cause them to diminish. But when the conditions are right, they are going to be going crazy. So just realize that that is the case. And this is a time of year I've already started to migrate my elephant ears into my garage. What you need to do is if you have some tropical summer type bulbs that you want to preserve, you need to bring them in to take them into the garage or take them into some place and let the potting mix that they're growing in. If you have them in the ground or if you are in the pot, if you have them in the ground, just dig them up and just take them in someplace where you can leave them lay until they dry. That's just better for them than to pull them right out of the pot or right out of the ground and then put them in paper bags and bring them indoors. I'm going to try with the elephant ears to grow some outside and leave them and see what happens. I know a lady called a couple weeks ago, said she's been doing it for years, and explained how she, what she puts on top of her elephant ears. And she's had good luck with them coming back. So today is one of the days when I'm going to cut some of mine back and then get them ready for staying outside. The reason why I'm doing that is because I started off with just about a half a dozen or so elephant ears. And then, they multiply. So you end up with more and more and more and more bulbs. And I just got so many. I don't know what to do with them. I've given a bunch of them away, so now I'm going to see what Mother Nature can do as far as if they're able to survive. So I've got some that are pretty much exposed in between the sidewalk and street, and then I have some in between our house and the neighbor's house, totally different exposure and protection-wise, and see which ones actually do the best. So let's head over to Mary Ann's yard. Hi, Mary Ann.
Thank you. I have some of those beautiful mums in pots that are in my choice locations, and I don't want to plant them yet. What is the latest I could plant my mums and move them out of my pots?
Yeah, to be honest with you, if I'm assuming they were grown in pots by professional growers, or did you grow them?
No, professional growers.
Yeah, those... To be honest with you, even though mums are perennials, when they've been grown like that and then try to be, planted from the pots into the ground, the survivability is minimal. So just realize that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yes.
So.
You may have luck, but the majority of the time they're not able to get their root systems established, and then consequently they're going to be gone in the springtime.
Okay, well, I know I planted a couple last year, and they're blooming, but they're a little scrawny looking, but I'll go ahead and give it a try. One other quick question. My hostas are kind of, half brown, and should I wait till they're pretty much totally brown before I cut them?
No, you can do it now.
Okay.
There's no problem doing it now at all. And so next year, if some of these mums start coming back, then you about the, let's say, mid to late May, you do your first pinching and you make sure that you fertilize them at least once a month with good fertilizer. And then you pinch them back, in May, June, July with a final pinching in August. Then you should have more branches, consequently more flowers at the ends of the stems.
Well, I normally do pinch them back, but I'm a little lax in fertilizing, so I'll keep that in mind for next year.
Yeah, fertilizing is really essential for them to really be, let's say, exaggerated as far as their growth goes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your service.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Historically, I've had bulbs that I've planted in pots, but unfortunately and I've always gotten them from the same place, Brightside St. Louis. I've always got the Brightside red tulips. They're my favorite. This year, I wasn't able to do it because of various circumstances were kind of out of my control. So I'm not going to have any bulbs in my pots sitting out this year. So I'm really sad that I'm not going to have any. But I would not get any other bulbs other than the ones from Brightside St. Louis. So just... you know, you had to order them a little bit earlier, and then they were going to be shipped from Holland directly to the location, the Brightside's location. And then actually where they had them was in one of the old greenhouses in Forest Park, and you just drove there. You picked them up, but it was very orchestrated and, you know, well orchestrated, let's put it that way. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody else's bulbs. You know, I have a bunch of daffodils and other things in the ground, but as far as growing in pots, I always do the Brightside tulips. Let's go over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me on your show. I wouldn't be calling in. I don't think you ought to be ashamed of your show. It's a good show. Take credit. I have a 4x8 raised garden. I put in maybe 5 years ago, and I took the advice and went to St. Louis Composting and got their mix, which was really a good, smart thing to do. And my question is, after having grown only tomatoes in it for about 5 years, and it settled some, is it a good idea to periodically replace that with fresh dirt or whatever, their mixture, or just to try to mix something else in or top it off, or what would you recommend? Because I had a lot of trouble with my tomatoes this year, but I heard other people did too, except for my early girls, they were fine, but the rest of them, it just, the vines were great, but they just didn't produce like they normally do. So is that should I periodically, like maybe every 5 years, dig that out and replace it?
I don't think you have to dig it and replace it. Probably every year or so, maybe just add, because since it's a mixture and it's got compost in it, that compost is finally going to just melt down just through a natural process. So consequently, maybe add an inch or two of a new topsoil compost mix blend, or just compost or whatever you choose that particular year. You don't need to take it all out and replace it entirely.
Okay, so I could go get St. Louis Composting, get one of their better rich compost and kind of just work it in there?
Right, exactly. Just make sure you don't just lay it on top, that you mix it in with the existing, let's say, blend that you have, and that's about all you need to do. Yeah, and this year the tomatoes, really had a tough time. And it was, even though people, there's a gentleman around the corner from us, and he grew some great tomatoes, but this year his tomatoes were not quite as good as they have been over the last, 10 or 12 years that we've lived in this neighborhood.
Okay. Well, one last thing. Regarding the compost, as you probably know, and I don't know if anybody was going to do a raised garden, I highly recommend they go get St. Louis Composting's mix, because it's not just dirt and it's not just compost. It even has some sand mixed in it, and it really does great. But mixing straight compost in it in time, I'll end up with just compost, and I don't want that. Do they sell? I can call them, I guess. Do they sell that mixture by the bag?
Depends upon the location. So I would call whatever location you're headed to. And some of the places have bag materials, some of the places don't. So, and then some of them are sold out. So just make sure you call ahead to make sure that they've got the product that you're looking for.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time and your help very much. You have a really good show.
It's your show, as you know. If you weren't there, I would not be here. Thanks a lot. And let's see, where should we go? Let's go over to Joan's yard. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was wondering, I have two lantanas, topiaries, and I was wondering if I could dig them up, put them in pots, and bring them inside or not.
You can. Success-wise, are they strictly in, let's say, soil? They're in the ground. They're not in pots or anything.
No, they're in the ground.
Yeah, to dig them up out of the soil and everything else, and to bring them inside, It's going to be a lot of work, and I don't think you're going to have much success, but you could call back, you know, in March and say, I had great success with it. But generally, this is not something that you really want to do. If they were in pots, I would say give them a shot, try to bring them inside. But to dig them up out of the ground and then bring them inside, that's going to be a tough scenario because regular, let's say, garden soil doesn't do so well inside as far as a growing medium. That's why there are potting mixes. And you can't just use, let's say, dirt to grow stuff on the inside of your home.
Okay. Well, if I do try it, should I cut the branches back? Are just leave them the way they are.
I would probably just leave them the way they are, and then if they start some of the branches or twigs or whatever start going downhill, then just cut those off as they go downhill. And before you dig them up the night before or the day before, water them really well, and then make sure that the pot is going to be adequate as far as the size. And I don't know how wide these are, but you probably want a root ball that's going to be someplace between, let's say, 12 to 15 inches in diameter and constant about 8 to 10 to 12 inches deep.
Okay. All righty. I might give it a try, and then again, I might not. Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, the cooler.
Do you have any?
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say the cooler weather makes it easier than, to go out there and do the digging and working.
Yeah, well, with all this wind, it's not going to be hard because they keep blowing over.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's been terrible. I've got them staked and everything. But also, any suggestions on how to keep squirrels from eating your pumpkins? I've Vaseline them. For the last decade, I usually put a big coat of Vaseline on them, and it keeps them off of them until at least mid-November. But they've eaten $30 worth of pumpkins.
Oh, really? So are we talking about pumpkins you're growing, or are these pumpkins that you've bought?
I bought.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, they're looking for moisture, and particularly this year, with it being so dry, they're really a little bit more desperate than they have been historically.
I guess that's why, because they usually leave them alone.
Right.
Until, I usually get to Thanksgiving anyway, but I didn't even get to Halloween. So.
Yeah, because, it has really been dry. And so, they're looking around for any kind of moisture whatsoever. And a pumpkin is really, a nice source for moisture.
All righty. I will keep that in mind. Maybe next year I'll do plastic.
So. Well, great. Right, good luck with that,
so
Joan.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, and now let's head over to Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Hi.
Mike, I've got three Korean spice viburnums that were planted in my landscaping 2 years ago. The first year, there was one flower on one of the three bushes, and this year, there were absolutely no flowers. But the bushes are growing, and every time I think there's a bud there, it just turns out to be more leaves. So what should I look forward to the third year, or is anything I can do to produce some flowers?
Well, if they're looking healthy, then, the growing medium, so in other words, where they're growing, seems to be adequate. The flower set, it could be related to, Mother Nature and everything else, so that may be the problem. And how large are they as far as, size-wise?
Oh, they're 3 to 4 feet tall.
So they're pretty good size, so they should be flowering. So, and how deep of shade are they in?
They get sun for probably half the day. Early morning, they're shaded.
Well, you should be getting some flowers on them. So maybe it's just a fact of them getting, well established to be able to produce the flower buds. But you should be able to have, some flowers next spring.
Okay. Well, that's what I was looking for.
Well, good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go, and let's head over to Anna's yard. Hi, Anna.
Hello.
Hi.
I am concerned about my oak trees. I had a beautiful oak tree in the front yard that over the last 2 years died completely. It was about 100 years old. I was told by a tree company that they thought it was oak wilt.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And I have other oak trees in my backyard, and I'm wondering, do you know someone who treats that in the area? I'm in Illinois.
Okay. Not necessarily. You might... Probably what I would, you know, I try calling Timberline. I don't have their phone number right before me. But they're over on this side of the river, but they may know somebody on your side of the river that could address this situation. But, I mean, oak wilt on a 100-year-old tree, I mean, that's a really old tree. So the fact that it lived to be 100 and it died, you know, relatively quickly, yes, it may, that might have been the final, let's say, judgment as far as its survivability, but the tree was, you know, I'm not going to say headed downhill anyway, but a 100-year-old tree is a really old tree to be able to survive just in general without any kind of oak wilt. And
okay, well, that's hopeful to me. Maybe the tree had just reached the end of its life.
Right. I mean, you don't see too many 100-year-old trees around any place, whether they're on the botanical garden grounds or, you know, out at the Shaw Nature Reserve or wherever it happens to be.
Oh, that's wonderful news, because after they cut it down, we counted the rings and we got right up near 100.
Wow.
So, anyway, I'm very sorry to see it go. It changes the whole ecology in my front yard.
Oh, of course. But, I mean, you've had lots of years of enjoyment before it's, you know, sort of like headed the end of its life.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And tell me again, this company you said that I should look at?
Yeah, it's called Timberline Tree Care.
Timberline Tree Care.
Right. And they're a tree service on this side of the river, but Ben Barnett is the owner, and he may know somebody that would be able to address your circumstance.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay.
And now let's, where should we go?
Chris?
Okay, let's go over to Chris's. Oh, there. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, so I've got three plants that we've kept outside and wondering about trimming them back, bringing them in. We've brought the mandeville and the hibiscus inside the last couple of years, and they've done fine just bringing them in and putting them back out. And then there's also some oleander. And just wondering if I would be okay cutting them back pretty hard now when I bring them in, or if I should wait, or if I should even do that.
I wouldn't cut them back. You could wait, and just anything, you know, any of the twigs or branches or whatever that, you know, go downhill or start looking bad, cut those off. But I wouldn't do any cutting, taking them inside.
Okay, got it. All right, so if I do want to trim them back just to keep the size down a little bit, should I just wait till right before growing season?
Right, exactly.
Bringing them outside.
Yeah, oleanders get huge. So, I mean, they're, you know, they're used in California along highways and things like that. So, I mean, they get massive.
Yeah, that's why I'm wanting to try and kind of trim them down. I mean, eventually they'll grow out, but, you know, they're small now. So.
Right.
Okay. Will do.
All right.
Thanks for the advice.
Yep, good luck. And, you know, they all can use, you know, you've had luck with the hibiscus and the mandevilla vine because, you know, you probably put them in front of bright windows. And the oleander, too, really needs a lot of sun. So that's the best thing you can possibly do.
Yeah,
with
a south-facing window that does pretty good. So nothing. We've never fertilized them in it, so we wouldn't want to fertilize them, bring it in the house, obviously. Right.
No fertilizer, you know, at all. So,
okay, yep.
Until they go out next year, then you start fertilizing them, and you can fertilize them through, I don't know how early you take them out, but in the spring and then the summer, and by the time we get to August, no fertilizer after August.
Got it. Okey-doke.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Yep, good luck with that. And it's a good time of year to get a soil test done because, I mean, there's been plenty of callers, you know, through the years and everything else that have said, you know, we're getting ready to put lime down. And I said, well, why do you think you need lime? Well, because that's what you do with lawns. No, you don't put lime on lawns, guaranteed. You only put lime down if your soil pH is acidic. So the pH system goes from 0 to 14, and 14, that's, you know, the maximum. That is where we're looking at as far as not wanting lime because that's too alkaline already. And 7 is neutral, so anything above 7 is more alkalinity. So if your soil pH from your soil test indicates that your pH is above 7, then lime is not something you want to add. So historically, you know, lime way back when in the 50s and 60s, maybe, you know, the landscape or nurseries or whoever were suggesting people do that. But and there are people that call into the show that say, you know, I had a soil test done and the soil pH was like 5.5. Yeah, if it is that low, then you probably want to put some lime down. But until you know exactly what the pH is, don't really do anything as far as trying to alter the pH of your soil, or else it's just going to have an adverse effect on your plant material. Now, certain plants like an alkaline soil, like clematis, that's not lawn, or like a lilac, that's not lawn, but other ones like acidic, you know, so like the holly. So that's, you know, what you have to do is look at the individual plants and then the soil pH. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, Scott. And yes, it is the Garden Hotline, tip of the trowel hour. And I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give a call. We've got phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. With your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show where we can discuss plant selection. And should you be buying plants and installing them this time of year? Well, why don't you call and let me know what kind of plant you might be thinking of. And the annuals, the pansies are still looking really, really good. Some of the other annuals, especially if it's going to get into the 20s, they're going to head downhill. And a lot of things, you know, that I grow for a seasonal color, I use basically houseplants. And I just kind of sacrifice them. At the end of the growing season, then I just kind of put them in the yard waste dumpster as opposed to bringing them inside or anything like that. I mean, you can do that, but it's just my particular choice. I buy them early in the season and just grow them on from that. And some of mine are really kind of overwhelmingly striking. The male lady that comes to our house, she asked me what one of them was, and I told her, and I said, yeah, this is, I mean, really sold as a house plant. It's really not sold as, you know, a seasonal annual type plant. And she didn't realize that. And I said, what you can do is just take some cuttings of it and actually put them in a glass of water, and they'll grow in a glass of water. This was some wandering Jews that I have cascading from a couple different pots and, you know, various things down through. And some of the other stuff I've already cut out because it's kind of getting near the end of the season. And I wasn't really, you know, I mean, they were fine, but I knew they were going to head downhill. And when you have several different, you know, plants or pots, whether it's in the yard or in pots or, you know, or wherever it happens to be, to sort of like just kind of do it nice and easy. And it's much better that way than having to wait till everything gets frozen, like coming up next, possibly this upcoming week. And then going out there and, you know, getting rid of all the mushy stuff. Anyway, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take to success. And across the big board, that's Drew. And he is producing. And he'll answer the phone when you call. And then he will put your name on the computer screen. And then I will talk to you about what's going on in your landscape. And I do landscape consulting. And it's called a walk and talk. Today after the show, I'm headed to a longtime friend of mine. I did a design for them many, 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 many years ago, and I've actually gone back to their home several times since then. It's Olympics, and they live like in Sunset Hills, basically. I guess that's Sunset Hills. It's kind of hard. Off Kennedy Road. And the tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual group or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting. 636-861-3344. About 2 o'clock this morning, bang, 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 bang. And so there was gunshots in our neighborhood. And so all of a sudden it was like, what in the world is going on? I'm assuming it's gunshots. I didn't know what it was. But within like 3 or 4 minutes, 4 different police cruisers got into our neighborhood, and they have special lights that they can really kind of see as they drive around. And they probably spent about 15 minutes going around through the neighborhood. So a tip of the trowel to the St. Louis Police Department for responding so quickly. I don't know who called them, but they got there, and these vans or, you know, police cruisers or whatever there have special lights on the top of them. And they're so bright, they could, I mean, they were just absolutely amazing. I could see them go up and down several of the streets, and it was like, wow. But to respond that quickly to something like this, and whoever, you know, shot or whatever it was, even into the sky or anything, I mean, to do that is just kind of, it's nuts. I can't say anything more than that. So again, tip of the trowel goes out to the St. Louis Police Department. Greatly appreciate your responding so quickly to a situation that who knows what it could have been. It turned out probably not to be too much or too problematic, because after about 10 or 15 minutes of driving around up and down all the streets, then I saw them, you know, heading back to wherever they, you know, their station was or wherever they sit. So thanks to the police department for responding. Makes us feel a lot better. And why don't we go ahead and take a call or two before we take a break. Let's go to Dave's yard. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I got a question. Recently had two large pin oaks in the backyard removed. They were full of the gall problems, and it was time for them to go. I hate to see them go because they provide us such great shade. Anyway, my question is this. The two big spots where the roots were, the stumps were ground out, how should I prepare that ground now? I want to sod it eventually, either now or is it a better idea to wait until springtime to sod? I'll put in some kind of a cool grass in those two spots. Any particular advice on preparing that ground ahead of time with topsoil or any chemicals or anything?
It's going to be a battle. It's going to be a couple years before you're going to get really successful sod growing in those spots. So just realize that sod or seed, successful lawn, let's put it that way. Because even if you get rid of all the, you know, stump grindings and everything else, there's still going to be a high volume of wood chips and a high volume due to those root systems, which weren't removed with the stump grinding. And then consequently, as that stuff starts biodegrading, that's what is detrimental to any kind of lawn circumstance or really kind of any kind of plant material circumstance. So I would get rid of the pile of stuff. You start mixing some compost topsoil, into this area and just be patient with it. And maybe, I know it's probably something you don't necessarily want to do, but just mulch the area and maybe put up, and just kind of do that and just wait for a little bit before you spend money on seed or sod.
Okay, so a topsoil mixture and then just work it in there for what, maybe 3 or 4 inches of it, something like that?
Right.
And then just wait until it try the sod maybe later on in the springtime.
Right. And if you have success with it, that's great. The chances of having success that quick is going to be somewhat iffy, but you never know.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, Mike, that's what I'll try, and thanks for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, we have some phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's have our head over to Lynette's. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How are you?
Very good.
Good. Earlier, you were talking about tulips and or your bulbs.
Right.
And my question is, the tulips that you say that you put in the pots, are those the pots you put in the ground, or do you actually just put them in your planters?
Just in regular planters. So, in other words, okay. I have some larger pots, and with the tulips, I just want to make sure that there's about 2 inches of potting mix in between where I put the bulb in the pot and the edge of the pot.
Okay.
And that's
all right. And that pot is not one you put in the ground.
No, it's just one that sits around up above the ground all winter long. Sometimes it gets covered with snow. Sometimes it gets covered with ice. It just depends upon what the weather is during the winter. And there's only been, I've been doing that for probably close to 20 years. And in essence, I started doing it in Soulard. Now, there I had a courtyard, and it was a little bit more protected, so I was a little bit concerned about doing it when I moved to South City because this is more open, as far as weather goes and everything else. But there's only been 1 year that I had where things, where I had some of the bulbs got frozen, let's put it that way. And that was a little bit disappointing, but after all those years, I can't say I'm, discouraged by 1 year.
Well, great. No, that's awesome. I have not thought of doing that, and I have some bulbs to plant, so I'm going to give it a try. Be able to show them off a little more other places.
Right, exactly. That's a nice thing. I mean, it's nice to have them in the ground. I have some daffodils that I've been, that I planted multiple years ago that have come back. Now, after about 6 or 8 years, my daffodils kind of pooped out, let's put it that way, and I've had to add some new ones to it. But for the most part, in the ground, that's great, that's wonderful. But in the pots, it's a little bit more dramatic.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go to... Let's go to Joyce's. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, my hydrangea bushes have got big brown spots on them. What should I do?
As far as on the foliage, it's got brown spots?
Right, on the leaves.
Yeah, I would say, you know, which kind of hydrangea is this?
I don't know. They bloom in the, well, they didn't bloom at all this year. They usually bloom like in late spring.
Yeah, so it's probably the PG hydrangea. But are the foliage, when did they start getting the spots in the summertime?
Right.
Yeah.
But they're getting worse now, much worse.
Yeah, so I wouldn't worry about them getting worse because they're going to lose, the foliage is going to drop off anyway. But I would, you know, be sure in case this is some kind of fungus that you rake up all the leaves after they fall and discard them. Don't let them just lay there, because if this is a fungus-related situation, it could be, you know, it could impact the new foliage coming out next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Sandy's. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Okay. This is my situation. A few years ago, we had a really, really bad winter for a short period of time. And I have a huge bed of ground cover underneath some oak trees. It's mostly vinca. There's a little bit of ivy in it, but mostly vinca. And as a result of that really, really cold snap, a section of it died out. So the next spring, I turned all the dirt over. I added black gold to it and worked it in really well. And I replanted. Well, nothing came back. I mean, everything that I planted, and it was, I don't know, maybe 70 plants, none of it took. So I planted it again the next year, and again, it didn't take. So I decided to have the soil tested. I learned that I have very high potassium and phosphorus in this soil. Is there anything I can do about that? Is that what's causing these plants to not take? Or, you know, what's my situation? This whole bed is full except for a section that's maybe 20 by 20. And I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, high levels of phosphorus or potassium is detrimental to plant material getting established, or, you know, existing plant material. So a lot of times people feel that, well, if I fertilize, then the plant material is going to do better. But in a bag of fertilizer, the second and third numbers are the potassium and phosphorus, and they are completely bad news if you don't have a soil test done and you keep putting the same soil or the same fertilizer down on the soil. So I don't know if you've been fertilizing for a long time or not, but that's probably the circumstance
actually,
is.
Actually, this bed, I typically only fertilize it in the spring.
Yeah.
I don't even fertilize it all year long, just in the spring. It's always, always done very well. It's beautiful. But I have this section where it doesn't matter how much I plant, water. I even used some mulch to maintain the soil moisture, et cetera, and nothing seems to want to grow there. And it was there before that really, really bad cold snap.
Right.
But since then, I haven't been able to get anything to grow, and I learned about the phosphorus and the potassium, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to let it sit. I'm not going to put any fertilizer there at all. But how long do I have to wait before I can see some results or try again?
I would probably just mulch the area and just leave it alone, leave it sit for probably 2 years or so, and then try the new plants. So the existing plant material could handle the levels of phosphorus and potassium, but the new plant material coming out of a greenhouse circumstance, a nursery, was not able or haven't been able to handle that circumstance. So that's
right.
Where your trouble is.
Okay. Well, it's not a horrible situation. I can let that sit. But what my concern is that if that potassium and phosphorus is high in that section, and I only fertilize it once a year, but my lawn guy fertilizes my lawn 4 or 5 times a year. He's using potassium and phosphorus in his fertilizer. Do I have to talk to him about what type of fertilizer he's putting down and how high the potassium and phosphorus is in his product so that it doesn't affect my lawn? Because this is not part of my lawn. The ivy bed is separate.
Right.
He doesn't touch that at all. I'm the one who does that. And he does my lawn, whatever, 4 or 5 times a year. And so it makes me wonder, you know, I didn't have the lawn soil tested. I only had the ivy bed or the, you know, the ground cover bed tested. Should I be concerned about my lawn having too much phosphorus and potassium?
Well, I'm assuming he has a whole sequence of fertilizer that he's putting down with those, you know, with certain things, you know, at certain levels to prevent this from happening. So you could certainly, the only way to find out for sure, I mean, you can ask him what the, you know, at each time, what type of fertilizer, you know, the analysis of the nutrients that the fertilizer has. Or you can, again, just get a soil test done and find out just in general.
Right. Okay, well, I have a huge yard, so I'd have to soil test multiple areas. And that's why I was asking, because the yard is so big, I couldn't just, like, pick a spot and take some samples from one spot. I would have to do, I don't know, half a dozen or more areas in order to cover all of the yard.
Well, if this is in the lawn area, all you need to do is get an ice cream scoop full of soil, no root systems or anything where the lawn is, in multiple locations and fill a Ziploc bag. You don't have to necessarily make them in close proximity. Just overall, you're looking for an overall picture because he's fertilizing it all the same. And that way, that's how you'll find out.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, three quick questions. Is there any advantage? I have a fescue lawn. Is there any advantage to cutting the lawn shorter over the winter months or, you know, this time of year? I normally cut it at about 3.5, almost 4 inches during the summer, you know, and everybody says, oh, you can cut it shorter over, you know, when the weather starts getting cooler. But, I mean, does that really do anything? I'd rather not do that, but if it makes things better, then I probably would.
Yeah, it is advisable to cut your grass a little bit shorter, even your cool season lawns like your fescues and bluegrasses. But probably, you know, they say you can cut them down to like 2 inches. I don't agree with that. But, I mean, these are, you know, pros that say you can do that. To me, to cut it down to about 3 inches, that should be low enough.
Okay. Does that help the root system in some way or something? Or, I mean, is it? I was just trying to figure out if there's really any advantage to doing that.
Well, the advantage is you're reducing the size of the blades. And then by reducing that, when we have, you know, I'm assuming we're going to have rain, we're going to have snow, we're going to have ice, that prevents the blades that are longer from laying over on top of each other and creating a situation where you could have potential scenario for more fungus problems. So that's really what it is. It's related to that as much as anything.
Okay. Second question real quick. I know it's getting kind of late to plant grass seed. Does that same scenario go for sod also?
No, the sod is already growing. So the problem with the seed is once it germinates, it can't get its root system necessarily deep enough into the ground before we get those temperatures in the 20s. And so, but the sod already has the root system set up, so you're fine with the sod.
Okay, and last question. I have some impatiens that are in like 10-inch pots. And you know, usually when you, at this time of the year, I'm going to just take them out and get rid of them, and they're pretty much root bound, but there's a lot of, you know, potting soil dirt. Can you just kind of shake that off in, like, you know, ground cover beds, or is that probably not a good idea?
It won't hurt. It's not going to do that much good just to shake it on top of the ground. And, you know, so, I mean, you could do that, but it's not going to do a dramatic amount of difference, but there's nothing wrong with doing that.
Okay. All right, Mike, that's all I needed. I appreciate the information.
Great. My pleasure. And let's see. Now let's go over to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good.
Sir, I'll be real brief if I can. I have a Schefflera. It's in a pot that's 3 feet by 3 feet. I have it on the front porch, morning light. When I got it, this thing was a foot tall. I had it for years. It's now over 8 feet tall, and it's curling around on the roof. Can I cut that back? I'm bringing it in today, and I have to tie up the sides because the limbs are sticking out so far it won't fit through the door. But can I cut that top of that back without hurting that plant, sir?
Yeah, you should be able to. They're pretty tough and durable, and, you know, with other things, I would say don't bother, but Schefflera's are pretty tough. And so, I'd say you're fine.
Is it normal if I have two grow lights, or just those floodlights above them hanging, and they do still drop leaves? Is that normal in the winter months, I guess, because I leave it on for like 12 hours, the grow lights on a timer. Should I increase the time on them because they're not that big wattage or what?
You're not going to change them that much. I have my grow lights on. You know, I have fluorescent tube grow lights. And I leave mine on for 12 hours. And
12 hours. Yes, sir. All right. One more question. I have a volunteer peach tree, of all things. It started growing up in my hostas bed. And it's a beautiful. I didn't know what it was. And it just grown up like. And I had peaches 2 years ago. Last year, I didn't, I think, because of the heat. Now this thing is like a story and a half tall and probably 25 feet wide. Can I cut that back aggressively, like in the early spring or late winter, because it's just getting way too big now?
Yeah, it's what you do is you cut it back, then you're going to basically cut off the potential for the flowers, you know, on the branches that have been removed. Then consequently, you're not going to have fruit on those branches because they've been removed. But this seems really
the best time to do that, sir. Time of year to do that? To cut them
best time would be after the fruits have been harvested. You're going to harvest the fruits. But the best time, if you're just kind of growing it for the, let's say, the peach flowers, would be right after they finish flowering.
Right after they finish flowering and cut it back.
Right.
Yes, sir. All right, sir. Thank you very much, and thank you for your program, sir.
Sure, my pleasure. And then after you cut it, after they flower, then you're not going to have your peach content is not going to, or numbers are not going to be quite what you anticipated. But there's nothing wrong with doing that. So thanks, Richard. And now let's see, where should we head? Okay, let's head over to Bill's. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question about raspberries. I put some planted some raspberries this spring, some yellow and red. And they told me to cut them off at ground level when I planted them, and I'd have a good fall crop.
What? In 1 year?
That's what they told me. Anyway, I do.
Oh, you do? All right.
I do have, the yellow ones are doing good, but they're too late. They're not going to get ripe. Is this normal or?
Well, I production after just the first year of planting, that's really kind of surprising. So, I mean, you've had great luck with it. So I would just kind of, that's not normal. You know, so I would not cut them back. And that will give them maybe the opportunity to, you know, to do some flowering / fruit set earlier in the season because they won't have to do the stem growth to actually have the flower fruit sets.
Well, what the nursery told me was that if I cut them off, I won't have a spring, a summer crop, but I'll have a bigger winter crop, fall crop. Okay. But you say just leave them grow, don't cut them back at all?
Right. Or if how many stems, you know, depending upon the number of stems, if you want to, let's say, have a crop in the summertime and then a crop later in the season, maybe cut half the stems back, you know, in the springtime like they told you, and then leave the other half grow. And then you should have fruit production on, you know, both of them at two different times.
That's an idea. Okay. And another question. I heard somebody told me that if I had them, my raspberries and blackberries close to one another, that the raspberries wouldn't produce, which my red raspberries are close to my blackberries. Is that a true story?
I don't know. You know, I've never heard that one before.
Well, if you haven't heard it, well, it's probably not true.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
Okay, that solves my problem.
Great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, good luck with that. And now let's head over to Barb's. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike. Several quick questions that I'm too lazy to look up the answer for. I want to transplant a hydrangea. It's just a small one. Do I do that in the spring or now?
Fall is the best time to transplant because the ground is warm, the root systems get established, and then they get to go to sleep for wintertime.
Yeah, oh, okay. I can still do it this year then.
Yes.
Just water it a couple times when I put it in.
Yeah, and water it the night before you dig it up.
Yeah, okay. It's just a small plant. The deer has ate it off, but it came up again, so I want to move it. Second, I left my elephant plant in the ground, just didn't think about it. It came up this year again on its own, looked good all year. And I wanted to know, does an airplane plant need strong sun, or can it grow without a lot of sun?
Now, what is this plant, elephant ears?
No, I'm sorry. I covered too much territory at one time. The elephant ears I left in the ground. No. Yes, the elephant ears I left in the ground over the winter came up just fine.
Great.
The question I'm asking now is airplane plant. What do you call it? It has the babies on it hanging off.
Right.
Do I need to have that in direct light, or will it grow in poor light?
You
in
mean,
the house, of course.
Once you bring it inside or as an inside?
Yes. I have it in the house, but I'm looking for a place to park it.
The more light, the better.
Okay. Can it stand direct light?
Sure. Yeah. No problem.
Okay. Well, that takes care of my question. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah, let's see. Why don't we go ahead and take a break? Mike Miller, KMOR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, we're headed back to the phones. Let's go over to Richard's. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Mike, I got two questions for you. First of all, is it a good time of year right now to mulch?
Yes, you can start mulching because the ground is, you know.
Even though that mulch is going to be dissipated by the time spring comes around.
Well, it shouldn't. Depends upon what type of mulch you're using. But no, you're doing it for, you're doing it for basically winter protection. And as the mulch, you know, breaks down, then that adds, you know, to the quality of your soil where you actually put it.
Okay. And second question. You said to me once before that it makes no sense to put the soaker hoses beneath the mulch. You don't want to. You shouldn't go through that trouble. But if you're going to put the mulch, you know, if you put the soaker hoses down first, the question I'm asking is, should the soaker, does it make any difference if the soaker hoses are beneath the mulch or on top of it?
Doesn't really make that much difference, to be honest, because if they're on top, it's dripping, you know, water basically directly down into the mulch, and it's just going to work its way down, you know, to the top of the surface of the soil below the mulch. So it may make a little bit of difference, but not that much that's going to matter.
Okay. Very good. That's what I wanted to know. Thanks very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Art's yard. Hi, Art.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
For a 93-year-old man trying to take care of a 40-by-4 flower garden, one that's an all-season cosmopolitan, all colors, with various crocuses, daffodils, peonies, daylilies, peonies, you name it. What type of a management plan would you suggest by way of curbing the heights of the foliage that would be developing?
You mean as far as off your...
Mike, what worries me is the spacing. People always talk the depths, but I'm worried about spacing because I can't refuse somebody who comes along and says, I got a certain flowering plant I want to give you.
Well, if you kind of got that attitude, I would say just if they have one and you accept it, just go ahead and put it in. And then if that's the one that's going to, you know, let's say, be more robust than something that's close by, then let them battle it out rather than trying to figure out, you know, the spacing in between. Because it sounds like with the combination of things that you have, you got it fairly well spaced because you, just the way you talked about it. But I would say don't worry about it. Just stick it in and enjoy it for what it is.
Okay. And the thing that really gets to me, Mike, is this. Be careful where you tread. Aeration and compaction. I'm talking with respect to the various type of gaseous constituents and what's happening to the microbes and so forth in the soils.
Right. That's why after the core aeration, you know, putting the compost down actually helps, you know, take care of that problem.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, I've got to think of the little fellows down right there. Thank you.
Sure. And now let's go over to Gloria's. Hi, Gloria.
Won't be long. The first question is, with these mini roses, they say you can leave them in pots. Can I leave them in pots outside for the winter, or I have to put them in the ground?
I would sink the pot in the ground unless it's a pretty good sized pot. The mini roses are, you know, they're really pretty tough, but if they're only in like 6-inch pots and you don't want to put them underneath the eave or anything, protection up close to buildings. But so consequently, that may not be an adequate soil for the root system to survive. If they're in bigger pots, that would make the difference.
Well, the directions say that you can use mini roses in the pots.
Yeah, in pots, but it doesn't say necessarily surviving our wintertime because we do not know what our wintertime is going to be like.
Okay, the next question is, when you do your bulbs, do you say you put them in pots? Do I have to cover them up to keep them cold? I mean, can I cover them up and put them in a shady area where they won't get so much snow if it's snow?
No, I would say don't worry about the snow. That's not really a problem. I put mulch on top of my pots just for an aesthetic reason. I don't do it for really pretty much anything else. I only put like a half to 1 inch of mulch, like I said, just for the looks.
Oh, okay. Bugs, can you use some of those inside the house and grow them?
You can force them. But they have to be, you know, like if you have an extra refrigerator so you can give them the cold treatment, they have to go through a cold treatment before they're going to bloom. So a lot of times people, you know, grow them outside in pots, sink the pots in the ground because they're small and they're going to be bringing them inside their house. And then consequently, after they've been out for the, you know, the period of time they need to be, then they can be, the pots can be cleaned and brought in.
Oh, okay, okay. I'm going to leave all mines in pots because it's different areas I want. And I like to put my other flowers in, and you can't, you know, they don't let tulips last a long time, but the others don't. Okay, you have a good day.
Okay, thank you. And Don, can you do it kind of quick?
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know how deep you plant your tulips.
Tulips go 4 to 6 inches deep.
And how far apart do you plant them apart?
Probably 3 or 4 inches at least.
All right. Is it too late to do it today?
No. This is a time when you want to start planting.
All right. Is elephant ears the same way?
Elephant ears, they go down about 4 to 6 inches, and the elephant ears, you can put them really kind of close together. You don't want them touching, but as big as they get, you might want to have some space like 8 to 10 to 12 inches apart, so they got room for the leaves to get full.
All right, then. Those are my questions.
All
Thank
right.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Have a great weekend.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thanks again. Back to the people with the cool season lawns. Seeding is getting very, very iffy. Mike Miller, KAMX Garden Hotline, back next week.
Whoa. Okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Back to the phones. Let's go over to Richard's. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Mike, I got two questions for you. First of all, is it a good time of year right now to mulch?
Yes, you can start mulching because the ground is, you know,
even though it's going to be, even though that mulch is going to be dissipated by the time spring comes around.
Well, it shouldn't. Depends upon what type of mulch you're using. But no, you're doing it for, I mean, you're doing it for basically winter protection. And as the mulch, you know, breaks down, then it, that adds, you know, to the quality of your soil where you actually put it.
Okay. And second question, you said to me once before that it makes no sense to put the soaker hoses beneath the mulch. You don't want to, you shouldn't go through that trouble. But if you're going to put the mulch, you know, if you put the soaker hoses down first, the question I'm asking is, should the soaker, does it make any difference if the soaker hoses are beneath the mulch or on top of it?
Doesn't really make that much difference, to be honest, because if it's, if they're on top, it's dripping, you know, water basically directly down into the mulch, and it's just going to work its way down, you know, to the top of the surface of the soil below the mulch. So it may make a little bit of difference, but not that much that's going to matter.
Okay. Very good. That's what I wanted to know. Thanks very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Art's yard. Hi, Art.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
For a 93-year-old man trying to take care of a 40-by-4 flower garden, one that's an all-season cosmopolitan, all colors, with various crocuses, daffodils, peonies, daylilies, peonies, you name it. What type of a management plan would you suggest by way of curbing the heights of the foliage that would be developing?
You mean as far as off your...
Mike, what worries me is the spacing. People always talk the depths, but I'm worried about spacing because I can't refuse somebody who comes along and says, I got a certain flowering plant I want to give you.
Well, if you kind of got that attitude, I would say just if they have one and you accept it, just go ahead and put it in. And then if that's the one that's going to, you know, let's say, be more robust than something that's close by, then let them battle it out rather than trying to figure out, you know, the spacing in between. Because it sounds like with the combination of things that you have, you got it fairly well spaced because you, just the way you talked about it. But I would say don't worry about it. Just stick it in and enjoy it for what it is.
Okay. And the thing that really gets to me, Mike, is this. Be careful where you tread. Aeration and compaction. I'm talking with respect to the various type of gaseous constituents and what's happening to the microbes and so forth in the soils.
Right. That's why after the core aeration, you know, putting the compost down actually helps, you know, take care of that problem.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, I've got to think of the little fellows down right there. Thank you.
Sure. And now let's go over to Gloria's. Hi, Gloria.
Won't be long. The first question is, with these mini roses, they say you can leave them in pots. Can I leave them in pots outside for the winter, or I have to put them in the ground?
I would sink the pot in the ground unless it's a pretty good-sized pot. The mini roses are, you know, they're really pretty tough, but if they're only in like 6-inch pots and you don't want to put them underneath the eave or anything, protection up close to buildings, but so consequently, that may not be an adequate soil for the root system to survive. If they're in bigger pots, that would make the difference.
Well, the directions say that you can use mini roses in the pots.
Yeah, in pots, but it doesn't say necessarily surviving our wintertime, because we do not know what our wintertime is going to be like.
Okay, the next question is, when you do your bulbs, do you say you put them in pots? Do I have to cover them up to keep them cold? I mean, can I cover them up and put them in a shady area where they won't get so much snow if it's snow?
No, I would say don't worry about the snow. That's not really a problem. I put mulch on top of my pots just for an aesthetic reason. I don't do it for really pretty much anything else. I only put like a half to 1 inch of mulch, like I said, just for the looks.
Oh, okay. And those bulbs, can you use some of those inside the house and grow them?
You can force them, but they have to be, you know, like if you have an extra refrigerator so you can give them the cold treatment, they have to go through a cold treatment before they're going to bloom. So a lot of times people, you know, grow them outside in pots, sink the pots in the ground because they're small and they're going to be bringing them inside their house. And then consequently, after they've been out for the period of time they need to be, then they can be, the pots can be cleaned and brought in.
Oh, okay. I'm going to leave all mats and pots because it's different areas I want. And I like to put my other flowers in. And you can't, you know, they don't let tulips last a long time, but the other ones don't. Okay, you have a good day.
Okay, thank you. And Don, can you do it kind of quick?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know how deep you plant your tulips.
Tulips go 4 to 6 inches deep.
And how far apart do you plant them?
Probably 3 or 4 inches at least.
All right. Is it too late to do it today?
No. This is the time when you want to start planting.
All right. Is elephant ears the same way?
Elephant ears, they go down about 4 to 6 inches. And the elephant ears, you can put them really kind of close together. You don't want them touching, but just as big as they get, you might want to have some space like 8 to 10 to 12 inches apart so they got room for, the leaves to get full.
All right, then. Those are my questions.
All right.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Have a great weekend.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thanks again. Back to the people with the cool season lawns. Seeding is getting very, very iffy. Mike Miller, KAMOX Garden Hotline, back next week.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or?
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane.
Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's infinitely refreshing!